Yes, you do.
Awesome. And am I pronouncing that correctly? Simon Majumdar?
You are. That is one of the best pronunciations I've ever heard.
Awesome.
That is fantastic. Because awesome. I get so many, even on the shows, I get, you know, Majum Buddha or all of that. I was just like, what? So that is great.
Baden? Cut to.
Exterior. Interior.
Restaurant.
Bar. Club.
Day.
Night.
Action!
Everyone, thank you for watching Restaurant Fiction. This episode in particular, this one, it's going to make you hungry. Actually, both parts are going to make you hungry. No, it's not only that we are breaking down the fictional restaurant from Always Be My Maybe Maximal, but we're talking to my dear friend and Food Network personality, Simon Majumdar. He is one of the best culinary storytellers and historians we know, and the information and the history and the love he puts into food, he puts into Maximal, he puts into Always Be My Maybe. I mean, wow. It's just wow. It deserves two parts. So anyway, I'm getting ahead of myself. My name is Manas Rose. This is the show. This is the podcast, Restaurant Fiction, where we review fictional restaurants, bars, and clubs in TV and film. Yes, our guest is our friend. He is on the Food Network. Currently, you can see him, you could watch him on, I believe it is Tournament of Champions, which is one of, excuse me, Tournament of Champions, which is one of the most popular food competition shows on the Food Network. He is also on, I believe, Guy's Grocery Games, which is also one of the most popular shows on the Food Network. I mean, and he has one of the best culinary podcasts out there, and it is called Eat My Globe on eatmyglobe.com. Anyway, yes, I asked Simon, what fictional restaurant does he want to talk about? And like that, like clockwork, he said, Maximal from Always Be My Maybe. You know the one with Keanu, the one with Ali Wong. I mean, yeah, it doesn't get better than this. Like I said, it deserves two parts. This is part one. Enjoy the ride. All right. Simon, viewers out there, Restaurant Fiction, we dined at a very, very high concept restaurant, if you will. We don't even know if it is a restaurant. We'll leave you, Simon, to differentiate and that. But let's just, it's called Maximal. Imagine some kind of lopsided cube of a restaurant that maybe would be in Frank Gehry's sketchbook. If Frank Gehry, you know, when he was lucid dreaming, if you will. All right, you walk in and already, I'm just going to tell you about the vibe. The vibe, it's loud. It is loud. The ceilings are loud. You can hear everyone's, you know, echoing. The lights, well, it is well lit, just like, you know, where we are right now. But also there are fluorescent lights in the table itself. You know, before, let's see, we dined and we had a coursing type of meal. This is a course type of restaurant, you know. We were told that there was a theme, and the theme was like, oh, we're playing with time itself. And we felt, and as a viewer, it's like, okay, well, time, like, is time relative, or are we in the multiverse, or what element of time? And, you know, there was two ways of looking at a restaurant inside Maximal. There was, oh, to be serious, and oh my gosh, or was this supposed to be filled with humor? Was this supposed to be comedy? Was this supposed to be absurd? And I guess the only way to really differentiate that was with the food. And we have to look, because the food, there are a few different distinct dishes, you know, that were, you know, in our history of eating and dining and cooking, they were still pretty fresh to us. First and foremost, everything on the table except the napkin was edible. It was almost as if this was like a scene in Willy Wonka where Willy Wonka was eating everything except the napkin. And the first course, I just want to get this right, was this garden of microgreens and lettuce encapsulated, and it was served alongside dehydrated seaweed and dried fish cakes. I was like, okay, let's move on. Not really full yet. The next dish was teardrop soup, or excuse me, it was asparagus teardrop soup, and you slurped it up, not like in the ramen way, but through a straw, And I mean, it was, you know, just liquefied, pretty much reduced oil of asparagus soup. That's fine. Caesar salad. Oh, there was a black dish, which means it was either all squid ink or all charcoal. The waiter, waitress, and not even the chef told us what it was, but it was just there to make a statement. And then there was some kind of deconstructed Caesar salad, which just did not have, it was more concept than crunch. Finally, before dessert, the real head turner was the venison. The venison, so it was a fillet of venison, or maybe more of a tenderloin. But here's the kicker: you listen to the life cycle of the animal while you ate it.
Yes,
you so
did.
We were like, is this being bold, or is it just being bold? Like, is it trying to provoke some kind of, you know, transform not just the Pavlov's dog element of I want food into something very, very triggering and emotional? Or is it just, hey, we want to make an argument and a conspiracy and provide some kind of harsh opinion? Finally, it was dessert. Dessert was playful bubbles. It was, yes, it was like some kind of lavender, sugary bubbles blown out of a blow dryer or a hair dryer, which pretty much was just like cotton candy. You know, yes, the whole menu was an enigma. It was a puzzle. It was quirky. I would say it's like eclectic. To say it was eclectic, I think eclectic is saying normal. This was another level. We were still hungry afterward, but you know, let's just say, do we, you know, what are we trying to say about maximal? Well, I think we wrote it best, that it definitely gives you something to chew on, metaphorically at least. So anyway, that is our quick review of the high concept meal dining experience restaurant Maximal from the movie. It's Always Be My Maybe. We are talking to amazing person, Food Network judge, Food Network personality, I mean, podcast personality, just an amazing presence in the culinary world, Simon Majumdar. Simon, what do you have to say about that review? And Maximal, the floor is yours.
There's nothing wrong with being pretentious. There's nothing wrong with it, because you can be. If you can take some restaurants and take them to that level, you can do that. And it may not last very long. You may last only a few, you might do it as a pop-up. You might do any of that. But I think sometimes when you do something pretentious, it's actually not bad. And that's the key. Like I said, I love what I'm going to have this evening for my supper or lunch or whatever. I'm going to have scrambled eggs on a bagel. That's great. Or I'm going to have a hamburger. I'm going to do all of those things. But at the same time, once or twice a year, maybe because I travel all over the world, you can have something that is pretentious. And I always think of Spain, I think, is one of the centers of this kind of place, because they always have three-star restaurants there. A lot of Michelin 3 stars there. Take food just a little bit into the pretentious side. And there's a great restaurant in Madrid, which I went to with my wife, called Diverso. And it's nuts. You know, we've got all the pictures. I've got it on my Instagram. If you look at all the pictures, you're looking at art, and yet you eat it. Now, there's nothing wrong with eating art, because a lot of food that's really beautiful is that. And you can come and take the food, you know, and destroy it. And I think that's an interesting thing as well. The fact is, here's art that you want to eat. And I think that's important as well. So the pretentious side of it, occasionally, is fine. There's nothing wrong with it. And again, when people go, oh, you know, I just want to eat hamburgers, or I just want to eat at, you know, fish and chip shop. There's a huge thing on TikTok and all of them where people want to eat in England at fish and chip shops. Don't get me wrong, I adore fish and chips. They're fantastic, particularly if you go up to Yorkshire. That's where the best is. It's the best. And I love that. There's fantastic chips, huge portions of fish, haddock usually for me anyway. You know, curry sauce. It's beautiful. I love that. But that's, you know, 10 quid, yeah, which is what, 10, 15, 15 dollars, you know, for the chips and everything. But that is fantastic. But occasionally I want to go above that. So again, yeah, I'm all for pretentious.
You're invited to Maximal, and I mean, obviously you probably know of this restaurant ahead of time. Yeah, what is that mindset?
Again, it's going, this is so different from anything else I've eaten, apart from other restaurants of that type. You know, if I go to Alinea in Chicago, Alinea has, again, lots of different things going on. And it's now created by, I believe that the chef has even, he's lost his taste, I believe, because he had an accident. But the food that he creates is stellar. It's stellar. And you're going, this is out there. It really is out there. But he's so good at what he does. So, but he's no better than the person who creates fish and chips, because that has to do it right. You have to be perfect at that. So I think when I go in, I go, you have to be good at what you do. And I go into some of the pretentious restaurants, some of that type, and I go, this is, you know, horrible, because it is. But for example, there's one thing in the Maximal restaurant where they wear headphones. I've been to a restaurant where they make you wear headphones, and it's one of the greatest restaurants in the world. It's called the Fat Duck. It's in England, 3 stars, and Heston Blumenthal is the chef. It's a phenomenal restaurant, and you put these headphones on, which he has giving you the, not the history, but the sounds of the sea. And he's doing it because that sound will create an experience alongside the dish that you have. I can't remember the dish that you have now with it, but it'll create that experience of eating and the sounds. And it is beautiful. It's really good, because what he's doing is going, this is something that I used to have as a child, this sound of the sea, wherever he lived or whether he went on holiday there. And he goes, it's beautiful. And you're going, okay, let's give it a try. And it's fantastic when you have that. So he does that kind of thing. Again, he's one of those, either molecular or something different. And he's not just molecular. He's got a wide range. And he can cook. He is the person who created the triple cook chip. And he, because he has a pub nearby where they do the best fish and chips. And again, he's doing the best fish and chips, so it shows it good. But he's doing this dish as well. So I love what he does. And in fact, he does one of the dishes. I don't know whether you're going to ask me, you know, what's my favorite, and I'll give you a few. But he does this thing called Meat Fruit at his other place in London. It was called Dinner. And he creates this fruit, and it looks exactly like an orange or a tangerine, and it has a beautiful stalk of it. And you look at it and you think, wow, he's serving me a tangerine or an orange or whatever it is. And then you cut it, and it was taken from back in the 1200s, I think, or maybe 1500s, when Henry VIII, I can't remember the exact date he was around, but this was what he wanted to eat, and it was something they created, and inside is like a chicken liver mousse. But when you cut open it, you can't tell until you cut into it, and it's phenomenal. Again, that's something that might sound pretentious, but that was from 500 years ago. So it's so, I think the kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? When you go, oh, well, I don't want to taste that because it's, you know, not so good, or it's molecular, or it's whatever, you're missing out. Just as you're missing out all the food in between. You've got to know everything about what you're eating. And for me, that's all the way through.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that answer. I love that you had that story of wearing headphones on eating a real meal at a real restaurant.
Yeah, the Fat Duck.
So,
which people will know if they're interested in that.
And just like in Always Be My Maybe, I'm sure the chef wanted the diner, wanted us at least, to blend gastronomy with emotion, like getting emotion. I mean, how was that experience eating at the Fat Duck? How was that experience not only from a food standpoint, you know, pivotal, but also transcended you emotionally? Like in the movie, some people were crying when they heard the life of the animal. Some people around the dining table were very, very enticed by it, and it didn't bother them. So, I mean, but, you know, and in terms of that, yeah, that it was working on two levels. Emotion, trying to see where your emotions lie. Maybe they'll change. Maybe they'll evolve. And then also on a nourishment standpoint.
Well, the nourishment standpoint might be you don't know. Because you know you don't know what they're going to serve. The eating the deer, you know, the white-tailed deer. I think it might be an interesting idea to understand that what you're eating was once alive. You know, and that's something that people in the US, I have to say, don't often like want to figure out. You know, they buy their chicken from the supermarket, and it's like three thighs or three legs or the worst, chicken breast, which is just blah. But anyway, it's horrible. But anyway, the chicken thigh is the best. But I'm going off Taylor. But what you want to do is to understand that what you're eating was alive. So that's what they're doing there. And, but again, look at all the rest of the food. The thing that makes me cry when I go back to England, and it does, it makes me feel really, really happy crying, not sad crying, is fish and chips. And I'm going, why? And it's going, because that used to be the dish that we always eat when we're at the seaside. Eating fish and chips on a you know, piece of newspaper with, you know, what do you call it, paper inside, and you have your fish and chips on there, and you're sitting on a bench, and you're eating this fish and chips, and it's probably raining somewhere because it's England, but we were at the seaside, and that to me makes me cry because it reminds me of my parents, who are both not with us anymore. because they used to buy the four of us fish and chips. And we'd sit there, and you can hear me getting excited about it. My mouth is literally watering. And you're eating it, and you're remembering we're all sitting there eating it. And one of my brothers has got a battered sausage rather than fish, and another one has got a fish cake. And my sister is only having the chips because she's vegetarian, and I'm having fish and chips. And we're all looking at each other's and wanting, oh, those chips look better, and I put them on my plate. And those things happen, and that makes me really cry as well. And so I don't think the emotion comes from all of that. It comes from certain areas of it, like listening to the deer smiling, listening to the deer rather dying, or all of these things that happen to it. So you can have that in any food.
From a personal story, when we, long, long, long time ago, we were a local reporter and we did an expose, a feature on the 4-H community, the Future Farmers of America here, the young, from elementary, I believe, to high school students, you know, who raise, who are in agriculture and cattle and farming. And on one particular day, we were at a state fair, and a young woman, high school age, came up to us with my crew, taps me on my shoulder, and pretty much says, hey, my heifer over there, the one that just won the blue prize, we're going to slaughter her in just a minute. Do you want to see that? And I'm like, tell me more. And she said, I know every single grain. I know every single grass. I know what the heifer, I know what she has been fed. I mean, I have been there since she was a baby, and now we are going to, yeah, would you like to be a part of that? And she was then telling me of how she was going to butcher it. And I mean, but it was,
I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sorry, but I just adore that, because here's the thing as well, that heifer has been looked after. And I guarantee you that that's had more joy in its life than any of the, you know, the animals that are put in the supermarket and doing all that. Now, here's the other thing, though, saying, you know, when people go to the farmer's market and they do, and they're going, oh, yes, but this is how everybody should shop. And I go, yeah, if they're rich, because I can't go and buy, you know, $20 on a thing of parsnips or whatever. And so what we've got to do, particularly in the US, and I say that because I've visited nearly 100 countries, we need to understand what's going into our supermarkets. And that's something probably for you to discuss later, but that's something we need. We're going in and we're seeing, you know, I've been to beef stock, yeah, beef, you know, I've followed beef all the way from the, what do you call it, when it's a little heifer or whatever it is, all the way through, and to see it being killed. And when you go and you see it being killed, it's difficult to see. And then when you see it going into the supermarket and it's just three things of thighs or three things of this, it's interesting to see, because you're not getting the whole animal. And I think that's the thing that we need to look at. But anyway, that's probably a different conversation to be having with you.
Round three on Restaurant Fiction.
Round three.
As we evolve, because we are continuing to evolve. We don't know where Restaurant Fiction is going. If we go there, let's go there. Let's see where the wind takes us. And usually, if this was an actual proper TV show, we would say, to be continued, ... But anyway, yeah, we're putting that in. But also, there's a couple of little footnotes of this amazing first parter. Number one, thank you, Simon. Thank you, Simon. We loved you so much. You're coming back on for part two. Actually, we just clipped it in the middle, and we're going to put part two in 2 weeks. So please look out for that episode. Is it better than part one? That's your opinion. It's kind of like our favorite children. None of them are our favorite yet. They both are our favorite. Simon's podcast, Eat My Globe, from eatmyglobe.com. I mean, check it out. It is one of the best culinary podcasts out there. He does interviews. He does deep dish, deep dives, and also just deep dives on Food Galore. And it is about the story. The story is the most important thing, and it is what Simon loves, and he shares it with the world. Because, I mean, he is one of the most worldly guys we know. Also, he's on the socials. He is at Simon Majumdar, and let me spell that for everyone. Obviously, he spells it, but just in case, it is SimonMajumdar. And then on TikTok, it is at The Real Simon Majumdar. Just like on TikTok, it is The Real Restaurant Fiction. I think it is Real Restaurant Fiction. Yeah, anyway, you can find us wherever you're watching us, obviously on YouTube. But most importantly, please subscribe, please like, and also please comment. I love reading comments. I mean, or better yet, you can even personally email me. I'm Monis Rose, and my email is monis@restaurantfiction.com. Until part two with Simon Majumdar. Always keep it real, keep it fresh, and keep it on the flip side.